Appellant counsel, you have 15 minutes for presentation of your case in chief. 5 minutes is reserved for rebuttal. Please introduce yourself and indicate which client you're speaking on behalf of before making your arguments. When you're ready to proceed, go ahead. I see you learned how to move the podium.
Thank you. May it please the court, I am Sarah Martin. I represent the appellant, EEM. My client was just 11 years old when he was talking to other children on the bus ride home. While the context is not clear, the evidence showed that at some point during the conversation, EM made the statement, "I'm going to shoot up the school," and another child, MK, heard him. EM then said, "Do you want to see proof?" and shook his backpack. EM did not have a gun. He did not have access to a weapon, and everyone appeared to agree that he was not intending to scare anyone. The state filed a delinquency petition alleging that EM committed the offense of threats of violence by recklessly disregarding the risk that his statement could cause extreme fear. EM asks this court to reverse the order finding him guilty because there is a reasonable inference other than guilt. And that reasonable inference is that 11-year-old EM made his statement without realizing the possibility that he might scare someone.
You know, he did say, "I'm just kidding." What was the passage of time? I mean, was that after everything had happened and transpired, and then when perhaps there was some excitement that he said that, or was it immediately in the same context, or don't you know?
I don't think the record is clear on the answer to that question, Your Honor. He did say, "I am just kidding," apparently still on the bus, and another child said to him, "We don't joke about such things."
Does it matter that he said, "I'm just kidding," if the issue is whether he consciously disregarded a risk?
I think it does, Your Honor, because it suggests that his intent was not to scare anyone.
But as you said, the state didn't charge him with intentionally causing terror. The state charged him with recklessly disregarding the risk that he would cause terror. So what I'm wondering is, if a person can make a statement in jest and nonetheless recklessly disregard the risk that what they intended as a joke would still cause the requisite terror.
I think I understand your question. I think the fact that he said, "I'm just kidding," or the fact that he intended it as a joke goes to the consciously disregarding the risk or the reckless disregard of the risk, because I think that an 11-year-old child would think that no one would take a threat or that kind of a joke seriously. Not every threatening statement is a true threat. So to find EM guilty of threats of violence, reckless disregard, the state was required to prove that he made a threat, that it was to commit a crime of violence. The threat in context created a reasonable apprehension that EM would act on the threat and that he made the threat in reckless disregard of causing extreme fear. I'd like to focus first on that last element. Reckless disregard means that EM was aware of the risk of causing extreme fear and then disregarded that risk. Recklessness is a state of mind, and there was no direct evidence that EM was aware of the risk of causing fear. So this court applies the circumstantial evidence standard. An element is not proved beyond a reasonable doubt if there is a reasonable inference other than guilt. The trial court's decision or the conclusion in this case.
Counsel, yes? Let me ask you a question about that. So there no direct evidence of EM's state of mind. Individual statements can be direct evidence of a state of mind. And we do have, and I hate to sound like a broken record, but going back to Judge Larkin's question, EM having made this statement, "I'm kidding," having to say that out loud, does that suggest that his state of mind was, yes, he thought he was kidding, but he has realized in the moment, in the context of the statement, that someone else thinks otherwise? Right? Why would he say it that way otherwise?
I think if that is the scenario, then the recognition has to be at the time that he makes the statement and not right after.
Well, this is all happening, isn't it, at the same time, roughly? That's how I read the facts, but maybe I'm missing something.
It is happening at the same time, but under your scenario, he makes a statement and then he realizes that someone could have taken him seriously. So the statute requires him to have that knowledge before he makes the statement.
Doesn't case law say when you're examining someone's state of mind under the circumstantial evidence test, we presume that a person intends the natural and probable consequences of his actions? And wouldn't the natural and probable consequences of such a statement in today's environment be to cause fear of violence at the school?
That might be one reasonable inference, but under the circumstantial evidence standard, there can't be another reasonable inference.
And the other reasonable inference you're advocating is that he had no idea that anyone would take this seriously.
That's correct, Your Honor.
What evidence supports that theory?
The evidence that supports that theory is, number one, his age. He is an 11-year-old boy.
I got to press you on that because you seem to be advocating for a conclusion that an 11-year-old child is not capable of having the mindset necessary to be found guilty of a crime when, in fact, the legislature, I think, has set the age at 10. So the legislature has already sort of rejected the argument that just because he's 11, he can't have the requisite intent to commit this crime. So wouldn't we need to have something else in the record that tells us that this particular 11-year-old child was not capable of forming that intent? And if so, do we have that?
Okay. To address the first part of that question, no, I am not asking for a holding that an 11-year-old can never be guilty of threats of violence. I'm suggesting that there needs to be something more than there is in this case. For example, under the facts of this case, if EM had made a similar statement after this happened, he would know at that point. He had talked to his mother, he had talked to the principal, he had talked to the police officer, and all of those people had told him that he scared other children. He cried when he became aware of the fact that of the enormity of the situation, is how the district court phrased it. So if we had had a situation where he has already been informed of that, and then he made the statement? Absolutely. That would be consciously disregarding the risk of causing extreme fear.
But you seem to be arguing then that the state has to prove in all of these cases that a person knew, and that seems to come up. There's tension with that and the concept that we assume people intend the normal consequence of their actions.
I would agree with...
It's circular, because then you say, well, you can't apply that to an 11-year-old because an 11-year-old wouldn't know that, but I think we can and do apply it to an 11-year-old.
I think that part of the issue here is it gets back to the trial court's conclusion in this case. And the trial court says, I'm finding that he consciously disregarded the risk because we have a collective consciousness as a society about this. But the statute requires that the defendant, that means 11-year-old EM, knew this. And EM's age, therefore, must be taken into consideration on this element. And it's not logical to impute society's collective consciousness on an 11-year-old. Adults and older children are probably part of this collective consciousness. We've all been exposed to too many horrible incidents. But as parents and school teachers and as adults in this community, we make an attempt to shield children from the uglier parts of our society. And that includes, and the reason for doing that is so that it doesn't seep into their consciousness before they have a toolbox to effectively cope or more effectively cope with that.
Was there any request in the district court for any sort of psychological evaluation or competency evaluation regarding whether he knew right from wrong, whether he had the requisite skill set, maturity, intelligence, to understand that this is a statement that would likely cause significant concern?
Not to my knowledge. Well, there certainly wasn't a a competency evaluation requested. I believe that there was a psychological evaluation conducted in connection with the predisposition report.
And did he successfully complete the stay of adjudication?
He has not yet completed the stay of adjudication. There was just a report filed. He unfortunately had an accident, which put him in a wheelchair for a period of time, and has been unable to complete the hours so far. But every other condition, according to the report I received, has been completed, and he just needs more time to complete the hours. In addition to it being illogical to attach the collective consciousness of society to EM, the record lacks evidence that would allow the court to infer EM's knowledge. There's no evidence that at the time EM made the statement that he was aware of all of the school shootings going on or that he paid attention to the news. There was no evidence that EM school conducted things like active shooter drills. In fact, what I believe they are called in the lower grades is stay put drills or shelter in place drills. And there's no evidence that EM school had penitentiary type security measures. And there was no evidence that he was told that this type of joke could scare others. He's been told now. Even if it was reasonable to make an inference that he should have known or that he knew that this joke would scare people, there's another reasonable inference in this case that he just didn't know. He's an 11-year-old child, and he didn't realize that his bad joke was going to scare anyone. So the state failed to prove that EM was aware of the risk of causing extreme fear. The state also failed to prove the third element, that EM's statement in context created a reasonable apprehension that EM would carry out the threat.
Well, here's the problem I think you have with that, and if it wasn't a part of the record, I'm hung up on the fact that he jiggled his backpack or something, saying, I don't know if he said, you want to see the gun, or I have the gun, or something like that. I mean, doesn't that carry it forward yet further than just saying the words when he was gesturing with the backpack?
The problem, I think, with the state's case here is that the full context is unknown. The state did not develop the record, and clearly it was their burden to prove every element. For example, there were no statements or testimony from the other children on the bus. And MK explained in his statement to Officer Cripps that he did not hear the full conversation, so his statement doesn't provide the full context here.
But isn't the full context, doesn't it include his follow-up statement of, well, do you want to see, and shaking his backpack, indicating that he has the means to do something about his statement? And you're looking at context as, okay, what happened only up until the point he makes the statement? Why doesn't full context include the statement and then the immediate follow-up of, well, do you want to see, or something indicating that there was a gun in the backpack?
I would agree with you, Judge Larkin, that the full context does include the shaking of the bag. I agree with that. But we don't know what happened before that, because MK doesn't know what happened before that. The court found it relevant that the statement was unprovoked and between children with no known animosity towards each other and completely out of the blue. And I think this context actually makes it less likely that a person would reasonably believe that EM would follow through with the threat. If it was made in connection with something, if it was made in connection with bullying or a dispute with a child or a disagreement with school staff, and he said, I'm so angry about X, I'm going to shoot up the school, that would make it more likely, that context would make it more likely that he would follow through. EM was an 11-year-old boy doing what 11-year-old boys do. He was saying and doing things without thinking about the consequences. His one-off statement on a school bus did not satisfy all of the elements of threats of violence, reckless disregard, and he asked this court to reverse the order finding him guilty. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martin. We'll hear from the state.
May it please the court, counsel. Appellant in this case, I'm sorry. I apologize. Your Honor, I am Martha Mattheis, Assistant Carver County Attorney, representing the state of Minnesota in this case. Respondent. Appellant in this case recklessly risked the danger that the students on the school bus would believe that he was threatening to shoot up the school.
What if we agree with that, but then we ask, did he know he was doing that? What in the record tells us that he knew he was recklessly risking causing the necessary result? So that's the issue. It's like, we agree he said this. We agree it's a statement that would cause others to have fear. The issue is, did he know that when he said it? If so, how do we know that based on what's in the record?
You know that based upon what's in the record because he not only said he was going to shoot up the school, but he alluded and referenced reaching to his backpack, gesturing that he was going to open it, and in his words, shaking it, that he does in fact have the capability to carry that out. He knows what it takes to commit the shooting up the school, that he is layering his threat to students on the bus with, hey, I'm prepared to do this. Those same words in an airplane, in a courthouse, would clear it. There's no reason why students on a school bus should be not denied that protection. And the reckless disregard, consciously disregarding a known risk in this country of school shootings is something that the district court was aware of, and the appellant was threatening that he was correctly found guilty of the charge of threats of violence.
I did take note of the statements in the district court's order regarding, you know, child in this age of school shootings, drills, all these other things. He would know this. So I looked at the record for the proof that he knew of these things or these things had been applied to him, and I think there is none. So it does seem, as opposing counsel has indicated, that the district court is taking sort of this collective knowledge approach and applying it to 11-year-old EMM. But I come back to, well, that does not seem to be inconsistent with case law, saying that when examining state of mind based on circumstantial evidence, we presume that the actor is intended the natural and probable consequences of his acts.
Correct, Your Honor. It's not as if the student appellant said he was going to shoot up the school and held up a baseball bat, like he didn't know what that language would mean, shooting up the school. And then sequential reference and reaching over to his backpack, shaking it, adds that confirms the veracity of his statement. So here,
I'm not usually one that gets into hypotheticals, but I couldn't help think of this. What if he says, I'm going to shoot up a school, and he has a squirt gun? Does that make a difference? I mean, that there's a visible object that belies what he really means?
It depends on what it looks like, because he may know it's a squirt gun, but many, many toy guns appear real today.
So do they even make squirt guns anymore? I don't know.
If he had just made the statement with no follow-up indicating that he had something in the bag that would be used to carry out the statement.
If he had just made the statement, I think that there would have been perhaps a closer scrutiny, not only by our office in charging him, but by law enforcement in following up. But factual scenario that he had the apparent ability to carry it out and asked MK, do you want to see?
So it said he took it the extra step further.
He took it the extra step further and added the specificity of what was going to happen and that he had the apparent ability to carry it out. And
did the state oppose the stay of adjudication?
Yes, the state opposed the stay of adjudication. that it was, in fact, this is a situation involving the threat of a firearm, numerous children on the bus, his MK was responding to his grandmother's home when he got off the bus, ran in, told his grandmother, who told his dad, who's an EMT, who immediately went into action calling 911. Yes, the state opposed the stay of adjudication, that this is involving a firearm. The threat of a firearm is a more dangerous situation in our society.
Counsel, if I could, I certainly appreciate that the threat of a firearm, it's always a very dangerous situation. And here, in the context of children on a school bus, it's terrifying, right? Would you address the state's evidence as to EM making, and it seems to me, you know, from what I've read, and of course, it is limited in terms of these being statements, recorded statements of both students, you know, fairly soon after these events unfolded. But at some point, EM said, "I'm kidding," right, while he's on the bus.
And that is
what
I apologize.
That is, I think, an accurate statement. What I'm asking you to do is analyze that in light, you know, does that do what appellant's counsel argues, which is offer us two reasonable alternatives for viewing this evidence as to his state of mind?
Appellant's statement that he said he was kidding, there was no information that any other student on the bus heard him say that he was kidding. In fact, the evidence at the trial court.
But I'm not talking about that statement as to other students. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand it didn't correct the terror mm-hmm. that, for instance, the other MK felt, or any other student might have felt. We don't have evidence of other students, but, you know, we don't. I'm talking about EM's state of mind.
EM's state of mind saying, "I'm kidding," is questionable in that then his gesture that he has a gun and it's in there, who would wonder if there is a gun, there isn't a gun, is he really kidding or not? Because his combination of words and actions lead you to a person to believe otherwise, that there it's not a kidding situation.
And could I just, so we're all on the same page, it was my understanding that he told the officer later, when the officer came to his home, "I said I was kidding." So, and then there was no evidence that anybody heard him say he was kidding. So what we really have in terms of evidence is he told the officer later after this had occurred that he said he was kidding. So the fact finder has to determine, did he actually say that then? If not, is he sort of proclaiming that to the officer as a defense, "I was only kidding"? And then we have to ask, well, if he actually, you know, if he said "I was kidding," is that a credibility determination that the judge has to make? Does the judge believe he was actually kidding or he wasn't kidding? I mean, how do we deal with that statement?
MK's statement, the statement of MK explains that he didn't state he was kidding, that he didn't appear to be joking, that he was serious in his tone, and that he was not laughing, that none of that occurred. And it's hours later when Deputy Cripps goes to the home and everything has started in motion that this was not a good situation or this was not law enforcement's coming in on this, that there is appellant statement, "I'm kidding." Because in MK's statement, he was serious, he was not joking, his tone was indicated seriousness.
So I guess my question is this, if we're applying circumstantial evidence, is a circumstance proved that EMM said on the bus, "I'm kidding"? Was that circumstance proved?
No. There was no circumstance. That
so
was
then
not.
Can EMM rely on that circumstance to establish a reasonable hypothesis of innocence.
No, that's, he's saying that after the fact, but there is was no evidence that any student on the bus heard him say he was kidding. In fact, his words and actions, shaking his backpack, indicate that he was, in fact, serious about it. And it's a bootstrapping measure by EMM to Deputy Cripps to say that he said he was kidding. And there's no evidence that any student, that he said that to any student. In fact, his layering of that he had a that he was going to shoot up the school, he had a gun, do you want to see proof, and gesturing to the backpack, shaking it, that is an escalation of the threatening words and the actions there. So that he is, in fact, not, there is no circumstance that he had said on the bus, I'm kidding, because he's saying that well after the fact that he wasn't kidding to the kids on the bus in reckless disregard, disregarding the substantial risk that others would believe him, is what the terroristic threats of violence statute.
And of course, it goes on that if he claims that he said, I was just kidding, that shows that he knew what he said had a serious probability of scaring someone.
Yes, the statute prohibits the communication highly likely to cause extreme fear. And he didn't, there is no...
You wouldn't have to say I'm kidding if you didn't know that it would cause extreme fear.
Exactly. That statute, whether it was in Mrozinski with leading the toe tags at the Child Protection Office, threatening that they were going to come back and harm the person and harm the social workers, that is a communication without any indication that here, by the way, here's a gun or here's a bomb or here's something that I'm going to use to harm you. Here, in fact, appellant has layered his threat and increased the scenario and facts that others are going to believe that he is going to act according to that tenor, according to his words, his serious tone, the tenor of what he is saying. His words and actions should not be, the court's finding should not be overturned. Judge Kane had sufficient evidence to find that the defendant reasonably committed the crime of threats of violence, terroristic threats, that he was reinforcing his words with his actions to make sure that he was believed. Shaking his backpack, gesturing to it that he had a gun inside.
Now, the district court's memorandum says, according to EMM, he further declared, I have a gun, do you want to see it? So the district court made a finding that he actually said, I have a gun, do you want to see it? Does the record support that?
Yes. The appellant said that in his statement to law enforcement.
Please. So it wasn't just gesturing and shaking. It was he actually said, I have a gun.
He said, I have a gun. Do you want to see it? Do you want to see proof? And then he's gesturing with his backpack. The statute prohibits those communications on a school bus, in many other venues. Children across this country, unfortunately, are subjected from a very young age, 4, 5, 6 years old, to hide under their desk, take cover, go into the closet, sit for hours when a threat is upon them. And in this case, MK was on the school bus with EMM going through this incident and then going and reporting it immediately to his grandmother and his father. Appellant was correctly found guilty by the district court that he recklessly risked the danger that others would believe that he was going to shoot up the school by his words and actions. The state respectfully requests that this court affirm the decision of Judge Kane at the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Matisse. Last word.
Thank you. I just want to briefly address the question about the circumstantial evidence standard and assuming that we attend the natural consequences of our actions. I was reviewing Rosinski, and it doesn't appear as though they specifically carve out this type of situation, but applying that in this context would really water down Rosinski. Because any threatening language used would satisfy that element. And Rosinski makes clear that we need to consider whether the defendant knew or was aware of the risk of causing extreme fear and then consciously disregarded that risk. And again, that means that we have to consider the fact that this is an 11-year-old child making this statement. It is not an adult. It's not a 16-year-old who is probably much better aware of all of the things going on, of the effect that those words would have. EEM asks this court to reverse the order finding him guilty. Thank you.
Tough case. Thank you, counsel. Matters were extremely well argued, as well as the briefing. We appreciate that when we're reviewing our cases. The matter is submitted. A decision will be issued in the statutory time frame. That does conclude our oral argument calendar. We are adjourned.